Hello and welcome to the podcast on industrial marketing by Bijoy Peter. With an experience of over 20 years, Bijoy helps engineering and manufacturing companies implement modern marketing programs that deliver meaningful business outcomes through definitive brand strategies, production of media assets, marketing automation, and lead generation systems, transforming their digital footprint globally. Hope you find the podcast valuable to your business. Do visit bijoypeter.com to stay connected.
Hello everyone. Today I have with me Rajesh Tyagarajan. Rajesh is a brand design communication consultant, and Rajesh helps brands and businesses energize their visual presence through creative design solutions that enhances experiences, strengthens relationships with the brand, and drives profitability. Hi, Rajesh.
Hi, Bijoy. Thank you so much. That was such a good introduction.
Okay.
That was a really good introduction.
So my first question to you, Rajesh, I'll pick it up from your website, artisticotopia.com.
Okay, perfect.
I mean, the opening line says, the voice of one's work is greater than the sound of one's voice. At this point, I want to know that because designing is like, I mean, it's a very holistic approach, and there is no beginning and there is no ending. There is no best design and there's no worst design. So as a designer who is into the business commercially and looking at it from a profitable relation both ways, how do you draw a line between skill and art? Or maybe we can call it a line between passion and skill.
That's a brilliant question. See, I always look at it this way. So I always look at both of them. Passion and skill can both be integrated,
right,
with each other. Because the way I always look at it is, you can always have skill.
Right.
I think passion drives it to a whole other level.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So for me, I'm very passionate about branding.
Right.
I've always been passionate about design.
Right.
It's now going to be nearly 19 years.
Right. You started in 2004.
I started in 2004. But like, I started my business in 2004.
Right.
Before that, I was working with you only.
Yeah. So that's a disclaimer we need to put out.
I mean, me and Rajesh know each other for decades.
Yeah. I mean, for decades. And also, it's like, turns out that our dads were best friends.
Exactly.
Which we didn't even realize until much later.
It's a kind of a DNA.
Exactly. So the way I've always looked at it is like, for me, I was always passionate about art.
Right.
Then I got passionate about design.
Right.
And then over the last couple of years, I understood, looking back at my 17 years, that, hey, I love branding.
Right.
I love logos.
Okay.
So, okay, what does that entail? Oh, shit. That entails everything.
Right.
Branding is like the concept.
Right.
So for me, I understood that, okay, I'm very passionate about building brands.
Right.
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 Now, what are the skills that I need?
Right.
To take that to the next level.
Right.
So for me, what I've understood is, passion comes first.
Right.
Followed by skill.
Right.
Passion fuel is the fuel for your skill.
Right.
I don't know if I said that right. it's okay. So let me put it this way.
Right.
When you're passionate about something.
Correct.
You will figure out what you need.
Right.
To take that passion forward.
Correct. So the reason I'm asking you this is because, I mean, we've both been working around with a lot of business owners.
Yes.
Sometimes when you start a design project,
yeah,
I mean, it's difficult to put a hard stop to the project.
Mm.
So either it has got to do with like a sense of completion from the artist side, or it has got to do with the client probably not knowing what he wants. So at this point, I also want to know, ki, where should the client also draw a line between creativity and practicality? So, I've seen a lot of business owners, you know, their projects have been going on for probably years.
Mm.
Right? There's no logo in place. There's no brand stationery.
Oh, God, so, what have they been doing for so many years?
It could be a conflict between, probably they don't know where to draw the line. They need to put a hard stop.
Yeah.
So, from an artist's perspective, as you rightly said, passion drives skill. But from a client side, I mean, what do you think that where should the client draw the line and call it a hard stop, saying that I've got the creativity that is practical, and this is, I'm going to use this design for this generation of activities.
See, I think it's a very loaded question, Bijoy, because I think it completely depends on what is the goal one is setting out to achieve for the brand.
Right.
So even if you've got a project that's running in for years,
right,
is it achieving the target that it's been set out
in
the first year, second year, third year for it to take so long?
Right.
So I always approach project in terms of what is the goal that we are setting out to achieve here?
Right.
Which actually is what is the problem that we're trying to solve?
Right.
Right. So where can I, so when you talk in terms of creativity and practicality, it the way I look at it from the Indian context and overall from the global context is feasibility.
Yeah.
Practicality is feasibility.
Yeah. And especially since time is the raw material in such an alignment, even for the client as much as it is for the artist.
Yeah.
I mean, they need to kind of make it tangible. I mean, or rather, how do they see this as a traditional businesses are built on brick and mortar.
Yeah.
And the client cannot be blamed for it.
Yes.
Because that's how it is. So they perceive service also as something related to input and output.
Mm.
Correct? So with respect to that, I wanted to know ki how can clients see an assignment related to design as a tangible part of their business, which they can touch and feel. So how should they see this exercise of designing or branding?
I would say it's nowadays, like, my role as a brand design communications consultant is also an educative endeavor.
Right.
When I'm sitting with clients. Because it's also, one thing is clients are a lot more aware than they were like when I started out.
Yeah, I think the entire market has evolved.
They've just completely, they understand now because of the internet and social media explosion.
Correct.
Like they are aware now about a lot of things.
Yeah.
But when it comes in terms to words like, all right, like how practical is it? I would always look at it like for clients, like, all right, if, for example, if I'm sitting across a client.
Right.
And a client is like, all right, this is what I need to do. This, I need all these things in place. Because branding is not really tangible.
Exactly. That is the thing. But the returns, I mean, totally affect the way people perceive their brands.
That's where the educative.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen people having a shabby logo.
Yes.
And there's a notion that, oh, I mean, the logo is shabby. The website doesn't look good. I'll go and negotiate with this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, you start looking negotiable.
Yes. Yes.
So that's where
that's a very good point.
Believe that educating the client is very important. See it as a tangible part of their business.
Yeah.
Right. So you were saying?
Because in terms of when you know, there's one thing that you just said.
Right.
In terms of, okay, they have a shabby logo.
Yeah.
I'm going to change the logo. Okay. You know what? I'm going to change the logo and I'm going to get this thing done. That really doesn't solve the problem.
Correct.
That's why the reason I said it's more of an educative endeavor also is because the client needs to be aware about, first of all, why are you doing this?
Exactly.
So when I sit with potential clients or existing clients,
mm-hmm.
my questions is nothing to do with the project that they've called me to discuss.
Right.
It is all got to do, can you tell me why did you start this brand in the first place? Or why do you want to start this brand in the first place?
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
I want to get to understand that.
The objective setting.
What is your objective? What is your vision?
Mm-hmm.
Not now, mm-hmm. because it's a trend.
Right.
5 years, 10 years, 15 years.
Correct.
So for a couple of minutes, they are not expecting that aspect.
Yeah.
Because they are thinking in terms of, oh, you're a creative person. I have got this. You need to create.
Right.
So I always talk in terms of, let's talk long term.
Right.
Because the long term, once I understand what's your vision in place for this existing brand or a new startup that you have in mind.
Right.
Once we have that in place, then we backtrack.
Correct.
And then we look in terms of, all right, for this first year, now that we know that's your plan,
mm-hmm.
for this first year,
mm-hmm.
what can we get done?
Exactly.
So that is where the tangible aspect can come.
Exactly.
That, okay, I'm investing so much money because if I tell you, oh, 10-year plan, okay, this is, it's going to run in a couple of lakhs.
Right.
You'll be like, how on earth, what can you show me from a logo? I'm like, no, I'll design a logo for you now.
Yeah.
I'll design your branding ideology in place now. It's not going to create an impact now.
Yeah.
It's short term. It'll create you a very basic, because you've got like brick and mortar, as you said, a business has.
Yeah.
Online, the logo is your brick and mortar.
Exactly. And
the
branding. And I think that also, I mean, it's high time people look at the relation with their designer from an account level. Than from an assignment level.
Hmm.
What happens in an assignment level is, as you rightly said, the business needs to get acclimatized with the idea of, okay, the logo has come in. Now let me digest this fact that now we have a logo. The second year could be, maybe the brand guidelines.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes everything is put onto the client and then they kind of get overwhelmed by the entire thing and nothing goes ahead.
I would say that they would get overwhelmed because we've not done that groundwork of building up that vision first.
Correct.
Because when you load up everything to a client in the first log, oh, you need a, okay, this is your, you want a brand startup? Oh, great. You need a logo, you need an ideology, guideline, social media, you need this, you need that, Google. You know, when you bombard like that, the client is like, what, shit, you're just here to take money.
Yeah.
But when I've done that groundwork,
let's
talk 10 years, let's talk 5 years.
Yeah.
It's very surprising many times when client actually take a step back. They're like, oh, shit, I didn't think 5 years.
Correct.
I didn't think 10 years.
Right.
Okay, I'm like, let's think about that first.
Yeah.
What do you want to... Because when you do that groundwork, now when you tell them, oh, you know, so we're building this brand.
Yeah.
Now we need to do these. Correct. This will help you there.
Right.
So from in my experience, clients are very receptive at that time. Mm-hmm. They don't get overwhelmed.
Yeah.
They may get overwhelmed when it comes to the budget.
Correct.
But that's all right. So what I always tell clients is like, so this is a line. I call it like a disclaimer when I speak to clients. Mm-hmm. I tell them that whatever solutions I am offering you in this initial, what I call the discovery session, is irrelevant whether you choose me or you go with another designer.
Right.
My solution to you will not change even if you choose to go to somebody else.
Okay.
Because I'm looking at how can I help you build this.
Right.
That's what I'm looking at. I'm not looking at, oh, you want a logo design? Great. Here's a budget. Let's do that.
Right.
So for me, many times when I operate that way,
right,
I see that the clients are a lot more receptive.
Right.
I may not get the project.
Yeah.
But I get references that come in.
Right.
Because the client has understood now long term. He's not looking at, because he's not overwhelmed. Oh, shit, I need to do. Because, you know, a lot of clients are not really, they're aware.
Yeah.
But they don't know what steps do they need to take.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need to go to a big agency? Do we need to take a small time design? What exactly. do we, who do we approach?
So, I mean, exactly. So, I mean, as you rightly said, asking is actually selling. Telling is not selling. I mean, I'm not putting it from a salesy perspective.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, in the right perspective.
It's what they said, right? I was listening to it one of the podcasts. What they said is, if you look at the core meaning of selling from the past, I don't know whichever, Greek or Latin, whichever, it is to serve.
Yes.
So you know me for so long.
Yes.
I'm not a big fan of sales.
Yeah.
We are very opposite that.
Honestly, nobody wants to be sold to.
Nobody
People
wants
want
to
be
sold.
Cared about.
If you serve them
and
they're happy, they'll willingly open their pockets for you.
So, I mean, as you rightly said, the initial discovery session that you have with the client, you put in questions which sets the objective, the purpose, how this is going to be driven, how it is going to be adopted into the business little by little. On a generic note, I mean, can you, and the audience we have for this podcast is business owners, probably, can you give them a starter, a few questions that you think they should be ready with before they approach a designer?
I would say maybe, I think the first thing that one can do is you definitely need a designer.
Right.
But I would say one of the first things to do is to let go of the word designer.
Okay. Oh, that's okay.
And look at, you need a partner.
A partner, right.
So when I walk into rooms, I look at, these are potential partners for me on this project.
Correct.
Because the moment I bring in that I'm a designer first.
Yeah.
You're a client.
Yeah.
It brings a hierarchy into play.
Exactly.
Where there's no really grounds for mutual respect. There's respect. There's no mutual respect.
Yes. Correct.
So I always approach it. I always would tell business owners, first look at it from the point that, all right, I'm looking to partner with someone.
Right.
It is a vendor, it is a designer, whatever is a service that you need.
Right.
But I'm looking for a partner. Why partner is because that's where I differentiate myself from a designer, which I used to be earlier.
Right.
What a designer does, I'm sitting, for example, like the business owner is like, okay, I need a logo.
Yeah.
Okay. Write it down. I need a branding, ideology, all of those things in place. What I need? I need a designer. Sit, you give the brief, the designer does it.
Mm-hmm.
The way I approach it, there's no room for discussion in that space.
Right.
When I approach as a partner, when you're looking to partner, the first thing that you can look at, what problem am I trying to solve?
Correct.
Because if you are, let's say, an existing brand in the market, what problem are you trying to solve that differentiates your brand from what's currently in the market?
Correct.
Because that's your USP.
Correct.
And today consumers have no time to waste.
Right.
So what are you, because that's B2C.
Yeah.
It's highly competitive.
Okay.
Right. So in highly competitive market, your customer really doesn't have that brain power to sit before he gets distracted by his phone.
Yeah, I mean, in their entire firefighting exercise, and especially since we work with this B2B companies, most of them, I mean, I think a lot of people...
You can say the truth, Bijoy.
The truth, yeah. I'm just trying to sound a little polite.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I've known a lot of people who started businesses 40, 50 years ago.
Yes.
And probably those were the days they would probably go to Mumbai to get their shop act.
Yeah, yeah.
And on the way back, you know, they would sketch something on a paper.
Yes.
And add some typical name,
yep,
which could be a common noun.
Yeah.
Not even like a proper name. They kind of twist it. So, for a designer, for a business owner who makes his own logo, and he has a sense of, I mean,
it's family.
Like if you ask me, I mean, how does my son look? I'll say he looks very handsome. But if you ask my neighbor, he'll say, oh, I don't think so. He looks very handsome.
Yeah.
So how do you get a rationale to clients when they say that this is my logo and I don't want to change the logo? Or I mean, or in other words, do you think that is it necessary that clients should change their logo before they bring in their branding? Or
that's like who came first, the chicken or the egg?
Yeah. Or as a brand consultant, you see that this logo is good. This logo needs to be taken ahead with obviously some tweaks. I mean, how would you advise business owners there? I mean, they come with that sense of attachment.
Yeah.
And this also combs in my next question that, as I said, these guys have started 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Now their children have stepped into the business.
Yes.
And they probably want...
Yeah.
They don't want anything out of it.
Yeah.
So they want everything new. So as a brand consultant, as you said, as a partner to the father and the son, I mean, how would you advise them on handling such a situation?
Well, I think I would look at it this way. Is the reason I'm even in the room when they've called me is because they know that there is a problem.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
Because if you've designed a logo
and
everything is going fine,
yeah,
I would not be sitting in the room.
Correct.
Right? So if they're going to call me or any brand design consultant right, in the room, they know that there is something lacking.
Correct.
Now, obviously, as you said, it's a very touchy subject.
It's a very touchy subject.
Because the logo is like the family, especially
exactly.
if designed by the father, the grandfather. I have this experience.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
They are not really receptive to the change if they don't understand. See, that's the past.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We are looking right now, we're sitting having this meeting because it's we are looking in the future.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
They know there is a problem,
yeah,
which is why we are sitting and having this discussion. Because whether, as you rightly said, you know, old generation is there, the new generation is now coming.
Yeah.
The new generation is way more aware.
Right.
So many times what I do is I let the new generation have their internal discussions with the old generation.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Because no matter what I say,
so do you enter that war room?
No, I don't.
Okay.
It would be fun to have this, watch those.
Yeah.
You know, be a fly in the wall and watch those conversations. But what I've also seen is it's just in terms of understanding. I think, Bijoy, I think the main thing here is also to just, that's where I think experience and expertise comes into play.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's in terms of when I walk in the room,
uh-huh,
I'm not looking to get the project, honestly.
Correct.
You know, there is always that the success mentality is always there. I'm walking in, I'm going to get this project, I'm going to walk out.
Right.
I don't go in like that. I'm like, if I get the project, great.
Yeah.
Provided we are a mutual fit.
Correct.
Right?
And that, I think that should be the adoption you should take as a partner, as a genuine consultant.
Which is why I said use the word partner.
It's a chemistry at the end of the
day. Because otherwise, at the end of the day, it becomes a torturous project. When projects stretch for so long, there's no compatibility.
Yeah.
Then the only thing that's a mutual thing here is the money.
Exactly.
Which in my experience is going to be painful also.
Yes.
So when it comes towards, do you need to change your existing branding? I don't think that is always the case.
Right.
Because of where we are in today.
Okay.
With social media.
Right.
Social media is completely obliterated the scene right now.
Right.
Right. It is what we talk in terms of your branding needs to be responsive.
Correct. Correct.
Your logo is great.
Yeah.
But how are all the other things associated with it? Your logo is just the face.
Yes.
How is everything else?
Right.
How's your brand voice? Now, when people hear brand voice, they assume that I'm talking just in terms of the language that is used in your communications.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm also talking one-on-one interaction.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
From your CEO.
Yeah.
To this person on the ground level.
Yes.
Do the communications match? In
right.
terms of understanding your ideology and communicating that way. I'm not saying that it's always going to be the case.
Yeah.
But is there some semblance of What do you call it? Is it cohesive in nature?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm talking about. So when we come in terms of, do you need to change the brand logo?
Mm-hmm.
Well, why are we talking about changing the brand logo first? So that's my question that I put out.
Yeah.
Okay. You say that we need to change. Why? Now, if you say, if you're not even broaching that topic, I ask other discussions. All right. Well, you've been around for the last 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And now that you've called me into the room, what is the thing that you want to solve right now to take this further?
Yeah.
And where are the blocks that you're finding, which is why you feel that you can't move further until we do these changes?
Correct.
Right? So when those discussions come in, because typically it's going to be sales.
Mm-hmm.
That's why any brand needs to change.
Mm-hmm.
It comes down to sales. Yeah. How much money is coming in?
Yeah, how people perceive, how their value, and that's right. What's going to decide the brand respect.
Exactly. What's your competition that's coming in the market right now? Yeah. How are they eating into your market? Because maybe 30 years ago you were there.
Right.
But now with social media, youngsters are popping up brands like nobody's business.
Yeah. It gets diluted.
Exactly. It's getting eaten up. See, what's happening, it works for the consumer because now consumer has options.
Yeah.
They're not stuck. So everybody else is to pull up their socks. So when it comes to that, it's like, all right, this is what our goal is for the next 5 years or next 10 years. You know, who are the other brands that we admire, respect, new ones, old ones, you know, we've seen the changes over there. We want to be in that space. You know, we want to grow in our space. We don't want to lose the legacy that we built in 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, what I look is, then I look at the logo.
Yeah.
I see, and I don't do this immediately in the first meeting. I say, based on that, I do research and then I look, all right, now based on what you've told me, how you want to move ahead.
Right.
Does your branding work for it? Will your branding support you or is it going to be a hindrance?
Mm-hmm.
Once I do that, that's when I'm going to come and tell you, hey, you know what? Have you considered, based on what you've told me, that this is how you want to move in the future, growth-wise?
Yeah.
Since you've asked for my expertise, what I professionally feel is that going forward, this particular branding that has worked for the last 30 years may be a hindrance for you going forward.
Okay.
And I'll give a couple of examples of other brands.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you a few examples also.
Yeah. It's like, so there was like, okay, so based in this conversation, I remember there was this brand called Ranjit Swasa, right?
Okay.
It's a heritage boutique spa heavily. It's one of India's top spa Havelis up north in Amritsar. And I remember when one of the owners approached me and he just found my website. He approached me. He was like, Raj, we want to change our website, build a whole new website, everything. I was like, great. Can I have a look at your branding?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This was many, many years ago.
Okay.
I looked at the branding. Now, I already did the homework before. So I already asked him a lot of questions on our call. We had a lot of discussions, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then I looked at his existing website.
Okay.
With had the logo and everything.
Right.
It literally looked nowhere close to what he told me.
Okay. Okay.
It looked, for lack of a better word, like a 1-star, 2-star hotel.
Oh.
But this is a place where the who's who globally would come to this place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So when I looked at that, I was like, oh, this is not working. Because the branding does not make sense with what I'm looking at. And so, if you have to do the website, first, the branding has to change. So we had this discussion.
So could this be put into a phrase called as pride of association? So when people want to be associated with a brand, they need to take pride.
Yes.
You know, in fact, even when companies, people who buy a Mercedes, it's the association of Mercedes that brings in the pride.
Many times it has nothing to do with actual product.
Exactly.
And everything got to do with the brand.
So that when you talk about pride of association, as you rightly said, people need to create something where the end user feels proud to be associated with the brand. But Rajesh, I've seen, this is the story from the end consumer to the logo.
Yeah.
Now this logo, the environment in which it's designed, in which its philosophy is created around it, the brand guidelines, the elements. Somewhere I've seen, especially in the B2B sector, because I work very closely with engineering and manufacturing companies.
Okay.
I've seen that B2B business owners, they love the B2C branding.
Mm.
It's very aspirational for them.
Yes.
So they are making a screw that goes into a bicycle.
Yeah.
But then his aspiration is around probably a McDonald's logo.
Yes.
Or maybe a Mercedes logo. So this pride of association, how does somebody trickle it down into the organization where the owner has seen that the vision I have for my business has been catered to through this design.
Mm.
Now I want to pass it down to my downline. And people, till the person at the shop floor should feel proud about it.
Mm.
So how do you, what do you suggest business owners, how can they cultivate this pride of association in the organization? Like probably this particular case study you said.
Yeah.
It's a relation from the end user to the guy who's seeing the logo, making a decision, I want to go here. This looks like a complete non-negotiable luxury brand. But the business owner there probably has this internal challenges. Mm. So how does he cultivate that sense of pride of association within his organization?
Actually, I would like to ask you that since you have worked in these segments because of B2B. I'm primarily in a B2C. That's what I love. So now that you've been associated for so many years in B2B,
I think, frankly, there should be nothing else but a carrot and stick mechanism.
Explain.
Carrot and stick mechanism is once you put out a guideline, it has to be communicated to everyone in the organization.
Right.
Probably the HR or an auditor, a brand auditor, maybe the designer or the brand consultant could be, do an yearly audit or a 6-monthly audit and do surprise checks in terms of probably just ask one of these guys, can you open the PowerPoint presentation? And you see that it's not complied to. You introduce a stick mechanism.
Right.
But somebody who's done amazing work.
Wait, can you elaborate on the stick?
I mean, stick mechanism is rather.
I think I'm back in school.
In fact, if you define a carrot mechanism.
Yeah.
The stick mechanism is about wanting to get there.
Right.
When somebody is incentivized, right? Mm. Probably if you say cops. Now, a lot of cops used to be extremely obese.
Right.
Right. So probably what the top guys did is they incentivized the guys who were fit.
Mm. Right.
By virtue of that, they did not have to put a stick mechanism to the guys who were obese.
Yeah.
So that gap or that human default that we have, probably that will solve it.
Yeah.
So you put in a model of carrot and stick is what I think.
I think that, I think that is one way. Because
I've done something more nastier in my organization.
Ooh.
So we have...
now things are getting juicy actually. Now let's talk.
We have a time attendance machine.
Right.
So when I bought the machine, I mean, nobody should do this. It's very cruel, but just a nasty example, as I said. We said that people who do not check in at 9 o'clock into the office, we kind of moderate half the salary.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's what is done in a lot of companies. Also,
so for a proprietary or for a very small organization or a small mindset like mine, the first thing came is attendance machine kitne ka hai? 20,000. So after 3-4 months salary cut, I recovered the cost of the machine. That's why it's a very nasty. But then,
Well, Bijoy, I wouldn't say that. One second. I'm going to reframe that word. I wouldn't say that it's a small mindset.
Yeah.
I think it's just a very smart mindset.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, even if you're a sole proprietor.
Yeah.
Where you've invested, at the end of the day, you've invested the money to grow your business.
Yeah.
Right, to get your staff growing as well. When they come up on time, it's punctuality, all of that.
Exactly.
So, I mean, it just makes sense that you need to recover the money also. Somewhere at the end of the day, it's like I put the money in.
Then we started taking this deduction and we started celebrating it. Now, what happens when you're celebrating, you know, generally the, when you, you're in...
Wait. Celebrating meaning, if somebody shows up late, you're celebrating it.
Because the salary has been deducted into the HR system. So there is a stick mechanism here. The first
So it's basically that person who came late is funded the lunch for everybody else.
Everybody. And this is probably a way to, I don't know, I think he probably feels so sorry about himself. Look at
Has it worked? How is the response? Has it worked?
See, it does not really work.
Hmm.
But as long as people understand that, like if you go to a gym, okay, I think it's a mindset that nobody wants to get disciplined.
Mm.
It's our human tendency of not going disciplined. We are used to, we are like basically born scavengers. We never were born with an idea of...
I think everybody loves discipline.
Everybody...
If they do it on their own terms.
Yeah, so that basically means no discipline.
No, I beg to differ.
Okay.
Because like, see, I go to the gym,
right?
But I go it off my own accord.
Right.
And that's a discipline. Right, it's a mentality that you
see. That's because you love to do it.
I never loved gym. Let's be clear.
Okay.
Whoever's watching, like I've been gymming now for the last 3 years.
Okay.
But if you met me 3 years, you've seen me.
Yeah,
I was malnourished.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So, I had incidences happen in my life that asked me to draw focus in.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you need to do to grow?
So these incidences which you're speaking about, I mean, how would you put it in terms of this company adopting? Like I told you the way I see it, one is to put a strict carrot and stick mechanism. The other is if you had to bring in this belief into the employees, I mean, what would be your...
Well, it's long term. It's definitely not overnight.
Yeah. So there should be like workshops on brand association.
Yes, workshop. See, one thing I definitely know,
mm-hmm.
And this has been communicated to me by a couple of brand owners,
mm-hmm.
is while they also have, they are proud of the brand that they own.
Right.
People who work for them.
Yeah.
Also love to be associated, as you said,
yeah.
pride of association with this great brand.
Yeah.
You know, for example, if I say, if somebody walks into the room and they say, oh, I work for Google.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or I work for Apple.
Yeah.
Not just Apple in India. I work for Apple in California.
Yeah.
You instantly, there is a shift in the person who's heard it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that kind of a nurturing should be developed in the
yes.
organization through putting up case studies and little bit
case
carrot
studies,
and stick mechanism.
Yeah, case studies. But see, I would say, while that is also there, I would say, don't just have boring, bland workshops where you call in people into a
yeah,
room.
Yeah.
I would say do team building exercises.
So, so do you think that, as we said, that this has to be an account-based relation?
Hmm.
The brand consultant should kind of maybe look at it as an initiative to ensure that...
Okay, can you elaborate on when you say account-based? What do you mean?
We've done the logo now.
Hmm.
People have seen the new logo.
Yeah.
Maybe after a week or two, that entire temperature of... we got something new dice down.
Yes.
So maybe after a quarter, every quarter, they run a workshop
yeah.
where various case studies are highlighted. And how it, like, if a employee or a internal stakeholder of the company is well-dressed, he maintains a discipline on the brand, he also gets respect in the market.
Mm.
He's less negotiable. Right? So if we are able to percolate that in the form of a workshop or something like that, probably that would...
That is one way. The reason I say workshops and team building activities is because I use this word in terms of humanize your brand.
Correct.
Especially when you're in B2B
yeah.
and when you're speaking about automotive or engineering sectors. At least what I've seen is it's very technical.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I've been to places like this. In terms of, and you've got workers and you've got your staff, your employees, everybody knows what they need to do and it's very clear. For me, what I've always seen is growth happens when you're also in a space that is more happy.
Right.
Not worried or
yeah.
stressed.
Yeah.
So can you humanize your brand?
Okay.
When I say humanize, you can do it through workshops.
Yeah.
You can do it through team building activities.
Right.
Right? Like engineering industries. Or when I say engineering, it's just a word for B2B.
Yeah.
Do they take staff for team building activities outside that B2C brands do?
Yeah.
Do they do that? You know, they
don't do that, Rajesh, because what happens is the kind of ecosystem in which
yes.
these B2B businesses are built, they don't work on the concept of MRP. So what happens when there is no MRP? Whatever
yes.
they are paying for their marketing, sales, branding, it
yes.
comes as a cost to that.
Yes.
Unlike if it's a B2C brand with this MRP, you know, a lot of cost accountants, they put in the acquisition numbers into the MRP. So they know that this portion of the budget is dedicated to branding, acquisition, marketing.
Can I say something that's a little controversial?
Sorry?
Can I say something that's a little controversial?
Yeah.
So there was this case that was done in the US.
Okay.
Right? I don't know if it's B2B,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, it was pretty much like B2B, you could say. Where this guy decided that he's the owner of this company,
mm-hmm.
right? It's got its staff and everyone. This was done in the US. I forget the name of the
mm-hmm.
name. What he decided to do is he decided to bring his... He was earning $1 million+.
Mm-hmm.
Cut it down to 75 grand
mm-hmm.
a year.
Okay.
And he made that 75 across all employees.
Okay.
So a new entrant
mm-hmm.
will get probably 15,000, 30,000 and jumps up. But
yeah.
your highest, you are going to make 75.
Okay.
Right? The whole market... pretty much put him down. Like, oh, you're going to go shut down. Your business
mm-hmm.
is going to shut down. It's not going to work. That's not how it works. You know, your employee and the boss can't be at the same level.
Mm-hmm.
He's defied all expectations
mm-hmm.
because productivity increased.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I said, like, when can you take your stuff out?
So, I mean,
the reason I say that, I understand where it's coming from,
yeah,
also
yeah.
from an MRP perspective.
MRP
but,
for B2C, but
yeah,
B2B
no.
guys, you know, they basically have to work in a reverse pricing model.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. If you're looking at long term, if you're looking your company to be running for long term,
yes.
this consider this as investment.
And I think this is probably the world's favorite FM station. It's called WIIFM.
WIFMOP
is what's in it for me.
Yes. Yeah. Well, exactly. It comes back to 5 years, 10 years.
Yeah, correct.
Do you want to have staff that comes in happy? Because when you've got happy staff, productivity is automatically going to increase.
Yeah, yeah.
It is irrespective whether you're B2C or B2B. Mm-hmm. It's irrespective.
Yeah.
Take personal. Mm-hmm. Right? Would you work if you're really stressed? If you don't like coming to the company? But it's work because it's paying my bills.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't do that for very long.
But would it be... I'm not saying the stress completely goes because workforce does bring in stress.
Yeah.
But if you are happy to come to the company to work with, mm-hmm. because you know you're also taken care of and you're not just a token number on the employee list, mm-hmm. your productivity is going to go up. Mm-hmm. That's my approach.
Yeah.
When you're doing your work, if you're happy, in a happy state of mind, mm-hmm. you know that this company cares for me. I'm not like going to be booted out for something or making... No, this company does care. My productivity is going to increase.
Right. So that should come out through the branding. Yes. Right.
And branding... what do you call it? Communication. Right? From staff, owners.
Yeah. And owners communication probably involves hearing first. Here to understand that.
Yes.
Here to reply.
Yes.
That perspective.
Humanize and approach with empathy.
That is, exactly. That's what a humanized
approach
is.
Not sympathy.
Yeah.
Empathy.
Empathy. Correct. So Rajesh, I mean, you've been around for, I think, 17, 18 years. And you are a very successful designer.
Thank you.
People look forward to working with you.
Thank you.
So what is your advice?
A long way to go.
Yeah. Of course. I mean, what would be your advice to the generation that's coming up who aspire to be a designer like you?
In 2022.
I mean, the generation that's probably maybe a graduate who's only gone to college like a work from home college. Maybe, you never know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what would be your advice to designers who want to aspire to, who aspire to be successful? I mean, what are the do's and don'ts?
Get clear on why you want to get into this field.
Yeah. But I'm asking you this
because
a lot of these designers who come into the market, it goes back to our first question. They've not understood the meaning of passion and a relatable skill.
Yeah.
They probably are carried away by the glitz of the line, or probably, I mean, maybe they have a notion about how things are. So what would you give, what would be the real advice you'll give them?
You see, I think you can see passion.
Yes.
Nobody needs to tell you about it.
Right.
If a person is passionate about design, they know it.
Right.
They'll do whatever is required to be done.
Yeah.
Right. I can also know when a person is not at all passionate about it.
Right.
Because I get a lot of resumes from interns, people who are working in the field that they want a job. Mm-hmm. And I can see if they've sent me a CV or they've sent me a portfolio.
Correct. Yeah, that's
if they send me a CV,
yeah.
I instantly know you're not passionate about what you're doing.
Right.
Because I'm a design firm. In 2022, really in the creative field, who sends a CV?
Right.
Right?
Right.
I've never sent a CV before. Because for me, it was like, do you want to see my CV or do you want to see the creativity that I can produce?
Right.
Right. Because creativity is not taught in school. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if you send me a portfolio now, okay, there is something here. Mm-hmm. Now, based on that portfolio, I'll get to see, okay, where is your passion? What's your skill level?
Right.
Right. So I think in 2022, which has changed the game for a lot of people since last year, since the pandemic hit.
Yes.
It's more in terms of if you're still studying. Mm-hmm. Right. So there are two sections. One of people. Wait, which section are we talking about?
So students who have, I mean, I would actually put this, date this question a little more before. Like, as soon as people complete their 12th,
yes,
they have a notional value that they get into the creative stream. Mm-hmm. And they pick up a graduation, then they do a post-graduation. But eventually, they're not able to make it.
Yeah.
Or it's a very graded upgrade. Mm. Some of them become self-employed eventually.
Yeah.
Because of lack of acceptability at a group level. Mm. That's what drives self-employed. I'm an example probably of that. So when you get self-employed, then your reality kicks in. That's where...
You're always meant to be your own boss. I think same job. Yeah. I think you're unemployable.
So this was also the context of my second question, line between creativity and practicality. Right. So what would be your advice to these kids?
See, I would say with students, if you've come out of 12th
and
you choose to get into a design line, a creativity line, first thing in my experience is obstacle is your parents.
Yes.
Because it's not the field that everybody is like, oh my God, you're going to do so well.
Yeah.
Now things are changing because with the influencer community, which is growing, right? Parents are beginning to understand.
Right.
Not completely still. It's still like, okay, is this really going to give you the engineering kind of income, the doctor kind of income? That is still prevalent. You know, as much as we try to be very woke and say that's not really there, it is there actually still. So if they choose to get into these places, then I know that that first obstacle is taken care of. That means they are very passionate about it.
Yeah.
They've been very creative before. Their parents know that, yeah, yeah, this is the line that you want to get in. Their parents are aware about all of these things. If you started your studies, I would say in 2022 or 2021, the reason I keep focusing on that year is because the last 18 months have driven massive growth from social media.
Right.
You really don't even need to get into a college. Nothing bad against colleges per se. Right. But in terms of education, social media is the go-to place.
Right.
There are sub-communities within Instagram, LinkedIn, which is majorly into education for creatives.
Okay.
Right? So, start, your education needs to be not just you going to the college and chilling out after that. Have your chill time. But at the same time, can you be part of these communities? Can you get mentorship? I think mentorship is key. Because there are online so many. And when I say mentorship, it's not necessarily all the time you pay for mentorships. There are accounts that you can follow who are stalwarts in the creative field, whichever field you want to enter into, follow these accounts.
Yeah.
So I always look at, because social media has got such a bad rep most of the time.
Right.
They say it's like, oh my God, you're just wasting so much time. Not necessarily if you regulate your social media. My social media is heavily regulated.
Yeah.
Right? In terms of what I train the algorithm to show me what I want to learn.
Okay.
So if I'm spending 5-10 minutes on it, is it offering me value? That's how I look at it.
Yeah. So this brings me to my last question.
Yeah.
This is just a optional question. You just have to pick one option.
Right.
Is branding a science or is branding a gut feeling? What is your option? I mean, if you had to put your finger only one.
That's tough, Pichai.
Okay.
That's an oxymoron question. That's an oxymoron question. But okay, if push comes to shove, I'll say branding is a gut feeling.
Branding is a gut feeling. Okay. So it's a matter of the heart.
There is a book that I read called Brand Seduction a couple of years ago.
Okay.
It blew my mind.
Brand Seduction.
Brand Seduction. Okay. It blew my mind. And it was just before when I was doing this particular project, Bazana, which is a snack brand that I had designed for.
Yes, and it's a very successful. I mean yeah, everybody, I have the pride of association. I tell my friends,
thank you.
By my friends.
So cool. Yeah, I've got so many responses like that, which has been great because it's been validation in many ways.
Right,
because
right.
I've not studied design. It's something that I've learned. I'm passionate about. Yeah. Because one of the founders of the brand, who was a brand strategist also, he gave me that book.
Okay.
And I remember I read it and I was blowing my mind because I was like, what the fuck? Like, what? Sorry. Like, what am I supposed to? Because it is gut feeling at the end of the
correct,
day.
Correct.
Because your consumer does not have time to sit and analyze the science.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But your branding has come through science.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. If you look at strategy, it's a form of science.
Correct.
If you look at the design aspect, it's a form of science.
Correct.
It's come from there.
Right.
But from a designer perspective, I can look at all the research. You know, they'll say green is eco-friendly. Freaking all the brands that are for eco-friendly will be green.
Right.
That's bland and boring.
Right, right, right.
It's not necessarily the case.
Right.
I can go with my gut feeling and design something that has nothing to do with that color, but still gives me the brand feeling.
Correct.
So when a consumer looks at it,
that's
an eco-friendly brand.
Right.
So for me, I would pick gut feeling because that's how I approach it as a designer.
So maybe we put it like this. It's a gut feeling driven by science.
That's a nice way to say.
So thank you, Rajesh, for your time.
Thank you so much. Bro.
And I'll also be sharing your URL on the podcast so that people can come and discover your work, get in touch with you.
Thank you so much,
Rajesh, for your
time. Thank you so much,
Bijoy. Hope you find the podcast valuable to your business. Do visit bejoypeter.com to stay connected.